What do Mattel, Banana Republic, ButcherBox, and Glossier all have in common? They power their businesses with Shopify. Shopify is the most innovative and scaled commerce platform on the planet that also happens to have the best converting checkout on the planet. And that's no industry secret. That's Shopify. Learn more at shopify.com/enterprise.
Ford Pro FinSimple offers flexible financing solutions for all kinds of businesses, whether you're an electrician or run an organic farm. Because we know that your business demands financing that works when you need it, like when your landscaping company lands a new account. Wherever you see your business headed, Ford Pro FinSimple can help you pursue it with financing solutions today. Get started at FordPro.com/financing.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade. I'm so happy to be here. So much going on. I think we had six huge stories and a lot going on today, as the president's probably going to go and see for himself how bad the hurricane is and then blame climate change. Nice. I never heard of hurricanes during hurricane season. I think you should focus more on getting helicopters in the air and not making Corey Mills do everything. So the president's going to go everywhere except North Carolina. He can't. It's so bad. And that most of those counties are red counties, too. Rural counties, hard to get to. Meanwhile, he'll go and he'll come back. I'm sure he didn't even want to be president right now. But unfortunately, we need a president, no matter who it is, because there's so many big decisions that have to be made. This hour, we're going to be joined by Major General Amos Yadlin, the former head of Israel's Defense Intelligence Forces and former deputy commander of the Israel's Air Force, which is beyond reproach. And this is an historic opportunity and window. I'll expand on that in a moment. So let's get, before we get to Congressman Steve Scalise in studio, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I have no idea. It makes zero sense to me why Biden would take Iran's nuclear facilities off the table publicly. Why is it so hard to say all options are on the table and we stand with our ally Israel?
Congressman Mike Waltz, I can't answer that, and I'm befuddled too. Time to strike. Historic opportunity to take down the West Middle East menace. And all Biden can say is Israel should not do it and don't. I hope BB does what everyone else says does when he says don't, and that's don't listen. Ignore him. Take it out.
Number two.
On the hurricane, Mr. President, why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours.
The president did exactly what a president in this moment needs to do. There are three major events, if you will, happening all at the same time.
And he goes to the beach. Yeah. Do it for 2 hours on the phone. It must be exhausting. Is anyone in charge? The port strike stopped shipping up and down the East Coast a week after Hurricane Helene. Death toll rising, over 130 victims still being fished out. Imagine what could have gotten done if the president wasn't on the beach and instead finished out his run at the White House at the White House.
Number one.
I think the momentum has shifted towards Trump. I think it will stay that way unless the Democrats try to manufacture something that we don't know about right now. And that could easily happen. At any moment, they could try to shift something.
Like what they're doing now with lawfare. 32 days until Election Day. Money is pouring into the Trump camp while still being outraised by Harris and the Democrats. In battleground states, they're all too close to call. But momentum's with 45. We'll see how this closes out. But what about the House? Talked to Speaker Johnson yesterday on and off camera. He's extremely optimistic. He's working hard, obviously. Kevin McCarthy is still helping out with his super PAC. We have, and then Steve Scalise is right here. Steve Scalise, House Majority Leader, always there, always upbeat, despite what he's doing personally and professionally. Congressman, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, it's great to be back with you. You're a road warrior out there. You know, all around, and we're doing everything we can, and we've got to save this country. I think everybody knows what's at stake in November.
Well, I mean, you saw right now, Democrats are outraising almost 2-1 everywhere. Why is that?
You're seeing a lot of money coming in online. You know, a lot of questions being raised about that. But at the end of the day, you know, Trump is starting to raise more money. People that Ken should be sending in $10, $20, you know, whatever people can do, because the left is going to have a lot more money. But frankly, all we need is the money to get our message out. Trump needs to be on the air in states like Pennsylvania, in states like Michigan, in Georgia, Arizona, North Carolina. Those are the things that President Trump needs to do, is to show, continue showing the contrast between him and Kamala Harris. People know how far left Kamala is when they start to see these commercials. And frankly, in Kamala's own words, she wants to ban fracking. She wants open borders. She will keep raising taxes and spending money to drive inflation even higher. And she brought all these problems upon our country that's just crushing middle and lower income families. And Trump will fix it. President Trump fixed it before. He will fix it again. That's the message that needs to keep getting out. And it takes money. So if anybody can help, there's a lot of ways to do it. But Trump's campaign is, you know, is, I think, hitting those right notes. They just could use more money to get the message out.
Yeah, I mean, it should, money shouldn't be an issue, especially in 2016. He was outspent pretty considerably, and you guys had all three branches of government in the end. So a year ago, it was total chaos. We didn't know who the speaker was going to be. You couldn't get a vote across. Eight heretics decide that Kevin McCarthy wasn't good enough, and they just made themselves a laughingstock of Washington. But now it seems like you've battled all the way back, put that behind a few election cycles. What is your message to hold the House? And do you believe it's 30 seats? I heard yesterday from the speaker it's 19 seats.
Yeah, you know, the playing field is more narrow because of redistricting. So, you know, when you go back a few years ago when we had a 30-seat majority, we just don't have those days anymore because redistricting has really limited the amount of swing districts. You know, you might have a total of maybe 40 to 45 swing districts. And about half of those are our seats that we hold that the Democrats are trying to flip. And about half are Democrat-held seats that we're going to go fight to flip. And each one of them is a $20 or $30 million race. And those are the districts that I go to help those candidates, those incumbents, to either hold that seat, flip the seat. And we've got great opportunities to add to our majority. I feel really good about holding our majority. The key is, can we grow it, you know, get to a 10-seat or more majority? All that's in front of us. Having President Trump at the top of the ticket helps tremendously. You know, Pennsylvania, there were three seats we had a chance to flip 2 years ago. We didn't get any of them. President Trump being on the top of the ticket in Pennsylvania gives us a great opportunity because, as we all know, Pennsylvania's razor thin. I think Trump's going to pull it out. And again, Kamala is against fracking. She might say whatever she needs to say today to get through an election. Nobody believes she's changed her position on any of those issues. That would crush the economy of Pennsylvania to kill fracking. President Trump wants to have more American energy. Those are things people understand and get, and I think they're going to vote based on those issues. And when they vote for President Trump, they're going to vote for those Republican candidates for the House. So we flip two or three seats in Pennsylvania. That helps us tremendously grow our majority. North Carolina, we already flipped three seats to Republican from Democrat. We have one more, Lori Buckout. We're doing events to help her. You know, Alaska's held by a Democrat. We have a great chance to flip that one. All around from Alaska to Maine, we have great candidates and we have great chances to win more seats. We need the House, Senate, and White House to truly turn this country around, work with President Trump to get a healthy economy, to get American energy being produced again, to support our friends around the world and show that America's strong and we're not going to let these tyrants and dictators run roughshod over us and our friends, and ultimately to focus on lowering inflation, right, lowering energy prices, and making America great again. It's real.
So you're in New York. You know there's a couple of seats in peril there. You got one is Anthony D'Esposito. It's going to be tough. There's some are you here to help him, too?
We're helping all of the Republicans. We did an event for Mike Lawler last night, yesterday morning, for Allison Esposito. She was Lee Zeldin's running mate and did a great job. They almost won the state of New York for Republicans because they had such a great ticket. You know, Lee was a great leader at the top talking about crime. Allison is a cop. She was a former cop. She talks about crime and she talks about getting the country back on track. She's got a great chance to flip that seat. Right. You know, you've got other members that are in really tough races. Mark Molinaro is in a very, very tough race. We did an event for him, too. So Elise Stefanik put together a big event to raise money for all of those candidates. We flipped five seats 2 years ago from Democrat to Republican just in the New York area, you know, Long Island area. And believe me, they're spending $20 million a pop to try to get them back. We're not going to give those seats up. We're going to hold those seats, and we can grow more like the Allison Esposito race.
Congressman, just so you know, I'm sure people realize it. I don't know why they're talking about it. If they are so for fracking, why have they put a moratorium on LNG new leases has come to a grinding halt. They've put a pause. Now, if she is for fracking and changed her mind, has yet to explain what changed, why she feels that way, why would you allow a pause to take place while Japan, the Baltic nations, Europe, they need our natural gas because we told them to stop using Russia's?
Right. And of course, Brian, she said her values haven't changed. And that's that. I'll translate that into English. That means Kamala's still for a ban on fracking. She's still for open borders.
Why isn't there more outward talk about the pause?
Oh, there's a lot. We passed a bill, H.R. 1, bill to open up American energy, including ending, you know, I call it a ban on LNG exports. You know, Biden said it was a pause, but then he said we don't really even have a pause. I'll tell you a specific example in my own district at the mouth of the Mississippi River, $28 billion LNG export facility being built right next door. They have the land, the permits, everything to go to build another one just like it, privately funded, $28 billion. They can't get the final permit from the federal government because of the ban on LNG exports. And you know who would help, Brian? Germany wants that natural gas. Poland wants that natural gas. And because they can't get it from us in America, which, by the way, would help our economy and would lower energy costs here, too, they're getting it from Russia. So billions of dollars a month is going into the pocket of Putin to go fight the war in Ukraine. And we're borrowing money from China to fight the war in Ukraine. That's being funded by our stupid energy policy because Joe Biden's banning LNG exports and so many other things that make it hard to produce, which is why the price is so high. We had less than $2 a gallon gasoline under Donald Trump. We can get there again with the right policy.
So you right now have two major stories, a natural disaster with the hurricane. The president is arriving in the vicinity 1 week later, spent the weekend at the beach. The New York Times writes, Biden and Vice President Harris have effectively dropped everything to schedule visits with victims of the storm, despite just 34 days to campaign for Election Day. Are you crazy?
Wow.
They have done nothing.
Nothing.
They have not been effective. These people in North Carolina are dying in real time. Corey Mills is using his own money to get helicopters. Fort Bragg is right there. We are not using our own army to save our own people. And the New York Times is covering for this guy?
They're trying to cover, but the American people see it. It's disgraceful how this administration's dropped the ball, the tone deafness of Biden sitting there going, oh, I spent 2 hours on the telephone. I'm worn out. I need to go back to the beach. These people are fighting for their lives, as you talked about. I've been working with my colleagues, Chuck Edwards, out in the Asheville, North Carolina area. You know, you look at Diana Harshbarger in East Tennessee. They're getting devastated, too. And they're just not getting the help from FEMA. And Mayorkas has the nerve to say,
he's out of money.
Running thin on money. Why? Because they're giving billions to illegals. How about you stop giving money, our taxpayer money, to illegals to bring them here, to house them in much nicer housing than Americans are getting, giving them free cell phones. And maybe you turn that money over to helping Americans who are in need, right, whose town was just washed out. These people are a disgrace. You know, Kamala Harris should be on the ground right now saying, we're overriding whatever Mayorkas won't do. We're going to stop bringing in people illegally. She won't do it. She's there now. It's like J.D. Vance said. Her first day in office was 1,400 days ago. Look at the results.
You know, what's amazing is I have to give Barack Obama credit. When he was a two-year senator, he came in and looked at the crisis in our economy, met with Hank Paulson. He had a plan. John McCain didn't. He won the election. You have an opportunity to put in that windbreaker. Day one, go to North Carolina. Yeah. You tell those people in Las Vegas, I'm not going to your fundraiser. I got a job to do. Joe Biden, you're too old to walk through the rubble. I got it. I'll take it from here. He would have backed off. Instead, she went to Nevada, went behind closed doors at a fundraiser, then goes to Washington and reads some scripted remarks and walks away from the press again. Lastly, Pete Buttigieg, Commerce Secretary Mert Raimondo, the President of the United States, allowing these ports to stop over collective bargaining that has the port workers asking for a 70% raise, while the CEO and head of the labor union, two mansions, two yachts, a Bentley. We have a minute left. Your thoughts about the way this looks and the push now to give the workers what they need, while who have already been pledged to get 50% raises.
Yeah, and it's one more example, Brian, right before the election, of how incompetent and how vapid this administration is at recognizing the problems that regular everyday Americans are having. The arrogance of the union boss out there going, hey, we got Joe Biden in the back pocket. He sure isn't going to do anything. Kamala's not going to stand up to us. So we're not going back to work until we get $400,000 a year. With overtime, they're making over $200,000 a year. And he's saying no automation, No technology. I guarantee you that union boss has gone back to one of his mansions or yachts with a whole lot more technology in his refrigerator than he wants on the docks when we're competing globally. And he doesn't want any new technology for his workers. By the way, American workers will still be pressing the buttons on those machines. We, all of our foreign competitors, have that technology, and they're fighting to block it so they can get $300,000-$400,000 a year. Doing what? If they're not using technology, they're not working nearly as efficient as other countries who are eating our lunch. It's time. I mean, this president and this vice president will not stand up to that kind of nutty attitude, anti-worker attitude. Let's actually get a president, Donald Trump, who knows how to turn this around.
Put it this way, or you know he's fighting to get a deal done, and he wouldn't have let it got to this point, or someone would have been fired, like your commerce secretary. Lastly, how are you? You look great. I know you're fighting. You're fighting cancer right now. How is it going?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm doing great. I actually have finished all my cancer treatments. I'm in remission. God has answered a lot of prayers. I've surely put a lot on his doorstep, and he's taking care of me and my family. But ultimately, it allows me to still go around the country and go fight for the things I believe in, to help these candidates and incumbents who are in tough races, who actually believe in the same values that we share, that are under attack by the Biden-Harris agenda. So much is at stake on November 5th. I'm going to be just barnstorming around, helping everybody I can, because we have to win, Brian. We have to win to save this great country. And people everywhere you go, they get it. They feel the same energy, the passion. So it gives me energy. It's good to wake up in the morning and know you're going to be going and meeting a lot of great people who believe in the same things.
And anybody who's going through stuff right now, this guy, you can shoot him, you can give him cancer, and he's going to keep going with a smile on his face and he's still fighting.
God gives you the strength to do it, Brian, and always great to be with you.
Great example. Congressman, thanks so much.
God bless you.
All right. We're going to be back in a moment. I'll take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. I want to expand on all those things. But we had a brief window for Steve, so I want to make sure to get his perspective in. They're flooding the zone, trying to win a very close House race. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
What do Mattel, Banana Republic, ButcherBox, and Glossier all have in common? They power their businesses with Shopify. Shopify is the most innovative and scaled commerce platform on the planet that also happens to have the best converting checkout on the planet. And that's no industry secret. That's Shopify. Learn more at shopify.com/enterprise.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I know it was a beautiful Tuesday night. Anybody watch the debate last night? Look, not bad for a football coach. Not bad, so.
I mean, come on. But number one, look, he was nervous. He had an everyman look to him, but he's not an everyman. I think he's a multiple-term congressman, 3 or 4. That's 2, 4, 6, 8, number one. Number two, he's been a football coach just for a blink of an eye. He was an assistant coach in Nebraska, an assistant coach at his school over in Minnesota. That's it. But okay, fine. I'll tell you, I coached soccer 13 years, 26 seasons. I have 5 licenses. The people I coach call me coach, but if anyone walked up to me and go, you're a pretty good talk show host for a coach, I'd say, thanks, what an insult. This guy's a two-term governor. Yeah, I'm a football coach. All right. He is sitting down. By the way, he did come off semi-likable. He is sitting down with 60 Minutes. That'll be interesting. Are they going to give him a pass? He's also going to do a late-night show. He's doing a pop culture podcast, and he did speak to reporters yesterday because, for the most part, they got him to eventually speak. They just want to get clear on policy. The reason why they're holding him back is so much of his personal biography is just made up or exaggerated. Awards he got in Nebraska that he didn't get, a DUI that wasn't really a DUI, a Tiananmen Square, a witness being at Tiananmen Square. He wasn't a witness at Tiananmen Square. Brings the weapons of war into war. He never went to war, nor did he carry a weapon of war. He abandoned his unit before they went into Iraq. He didn't just decide to run for Congress. These are just off the top of my head. This is not a great pick, all right? Not a great pick. That's her first big decision. Looked like Trump made a pretty good one.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I have no idea. It makes zero sense to me why Biden would take Iran's nuclear facilities off the table publicly. Why is it so hard to say all options are on the table and we stand with our ally Israel to support itself? Now, tactically, operationally, perhaps Iran can surge its air defenses or protect some of its oil facilities, ballistic missile production sites, its storage sites or elsewhere, because Biden loves to tell people what he's not going to do and what he's not going to support.
Right. And people ignore him. Thankfully, the prime minister is beginning to ignore him on a daily basis. And now they don't even speak. And who can blame him? This, to me, in my humble opinion, is an historic opportunity. Both their henchmen, Hamas and Hezbollah, are back on their heels. They've been decapitated in a major way. We have just learned that Sinwar's essentially chief of staff is now dead. Sinwar's would be dead right now if he wasn't surrounding himself like a coward with hostages that deserve their freedom, never should have been taken, obviously, by their definition. And then you have a situation where they launched 200 or 180 rockets into Israel, many of which failed. And right now they don't have the missile defense to stop a attack from Israel. And they don't have their flanks watched by Hezbollah and Hamas. This is an historic opportunity, not just for Israel, but for the entire West and the Middle East, who sees this cancer called the Iranian government rule that area and terrorize since 1979. That's what I think. But what does Major General Amos Yadlin think? He is the former head of Israel's Defense Intelligence Force and former deputy commander of Israel's Air Force. He serves as chairman of the Ben-Gurion Heritage Institute. Major General, welcome back. How stunned were you to hear Joe Biden say, I don't want them to hit the nuclear facilities?
I haven't heard him saying that he don't want. I'm watching four American presidents in a row, Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden, saying that they will not let Iran have a nuclear.
Okay, wait, Major General, let me just let you hear this, and then you could decide what he means. Cut 32.
Do you support an attack on Iran's nuclear sites by Israel?
The answer is no. I think there's things we'll be discussing with the Israelis what they're going to do, but all seven of us agree that they have a right to respond, but they should respond in proportion.
He says no, I am not for it. Number one, tactically, should you ever say that? Number two, why would you take that off the table? It changes everything if they get a nuclear weapon.
Absolutely. I'm totally saying that it should be a common goal of the U.S. and Israel that Iran will never have a nuclear bomb. There are still a year and a half from the bomb if they will decide tonight. You know, we contemplated on attacking them when I was in service 15 years ago. And they haven't gone forward because they know what Israel and hopefully the U.S. will do.
Yeah, Major General, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reconnect with you because we need to hear what you're saying. And I just feel like there's interference on this line. So we'll reconnect with you in a second. But I want to pick up this conversation in a minute when we reconnect. But this is so important. The President of the United States not speaking to the Prime Minister of Israel at a time in which there's a ground operation in Lebanon to take out Hezbollah, at a time in which just days ago Nasrallah was taken out, exploding pagers wiped out at least 30 and wounded 3,000 Hezbollah fighters who kill Americans. All right? They kill Americans since the 80s. They went into Iraq. They went into Syria. They help prop up Assad. They're burying these people alive. They take aim at our 900 men and women who are stationed in Syria. We don't know who is responsible. The three that were killed months ago, no retribution yet, but we know it was an Iranian militia. Nothing should be off the table, even if it is. Why would you say that? So, Major General is back with us. So I just want you to finish your thought. You said you thought about taking this out years ago. You believe that their breakout of a nuclear weapon, you said to me it's over a year away. I heard weeks.
No, weeks is to enrich the uranium that are now at 60% to a level of military use, which is 90-95%. But then they have to weaponize it. And according to my best knowledge, they don't have a weapon group working. They have scientists. They know how to do it, but they are not working on a project. And this will take about a year. I'm not anymore the chief of intelligence. And anytime I see our chief of intelligence or your chief of intelligence, I am telling them the number one intelligence requirement is to know what is the Iranians doing on weaponization. To the best of my knowledge, they are a year and a half away. But you're absolutely right that if we compare the consideration of what is the cost of attacking Iran, the benefit, of course, is to destroy their nuclear program. The cost used to be no legitimacy, Hezbollah attacking and destroying Israel, and U.S. that afraid of Iran closing the Strait of Hormuz or attacking your forces in Qatar and in Bahrain. When we look today at these three barriers to the decision to attack, two of them disappear. Iran attacked Israel for the second time with hundreds of ballistic missiles. Legitimacy is there. Hezbollah is in the worst shape he ever been. Who dreams that after we decapitate his leadership, including Nasrallah, that they will not be able even to revenge by killing one Israeli? So the main decision is in the American court. And let me remind you that even Republican presidents were not happy to attack Iran. If you remember the huge reconnaissance airplane that were downed by the Iranians during the time of Trump,
A drone, and there should have been an answer to that. But later they would kill Soleimani for that, and they would shoot into an empty building and got some guys PTSD, or excuse me, some traumatic brain injury, TBI. So that is serious. But for the most part, they killed their most valuable member of their lethal fighting force, Soleimani. And I think we should have answered when they took out that multi-billion-dollar drone. But I think it's pretty clear that the previous administration was strangling them with sanctions and not letting them to sell oil. They have put a thumb in the eye of the Biden administration, who's trying to reapproach them. What has kindness got us with Iran? Where has it got us?
So if you want to debrief the previous administration, their withdrawal from the deal, which can be understood because the deal was very problematic. However, they haven't prepared Plan B if the Iranians will violate the deal as well. And the Iranians were with 300 kilograms of enriched uranium. And now they are with 10 tons of enriched uranium. So there was no reaction from the Trump administration when Iran violated the deal and breached the deal and went forward. So I hope that whoever will be the next president will understand that.
Major General, do you really compare both philosophies and approaches between the administration? You had one, with no on-site inspection, sign off on an Iranian deal that would have allowed them to continue to deploy militias and fighting forces throughout the area, not even swear off terrorism. In fact, Soleimani was landing in Iraq to foment more violence, probably against U.S. forces. I think they were enriching uranium, absolutely. But at the same time, we were denying them a thriving economy because they weren't able to live off their oil. Here's what Mike Waltz said. Cut 36.
Look, we can't normalize hundreds of ballistic missiles being launched from Iranian soil indiscriminately at Israeli civilians in their cities without a serious response. The only way that we are going to de-escalate is with a partial escalation.
So this is an opportunity right now. I don't see it any other way. And I thought Natalie Bennett, who is obviously a rival of Netanyahu, is even more direct. He thinks this is the opportunity to take out this program. This might be the one time in which the Israeli government seems to be on the same page. What are you projecting they will do?
I think they are contemplating on a couple of parameters. When to do it, you can react immediately the same night or the next day. I haven't seen that happen. Then what target you're going to attack? But before, what is your strategic objective? When they were attacked in April, their strategic objective was to close the case and not to escalate. So they signaled that Iran is vulnerable by attacking S-300 radar, and that was it. I don't think signaling now is on the table. I think it's whether retaliation or deterrence or a strategic change. That's what I guess you are recommending.
Well, they were talking about oil fields. They were talking about oil fields or weapons.
I'm speaking about four families of targets. First is a military target, like the S-300, not one battery, the whole array, or the missile, the ballistic missile bases. So this is tit for tat and staying in the military realm, because the Iranians, they hit civilians, but they say that they aim only to a military base. So this is one family. The second family is what you said, the energy sector, and what basically we did in Yemen, in Hudaydah port, and to stop the Iranian export to China. I'm not sure that the American administration will like it, because it means that the price of oil going up. The third family is the regime. If you listen to Prime Minister Netanyahu when he spoke, he said that Haniyeh, head of Hamas, and Nasrallah, head of Hezbollah, didn't took him seriously, and now they are in another war. So it can be the personalities that lead the regime, or some location. Last but not least, what we started with, the nuclear program. This cannot be done in a night. You have to plan it. You have to make sure that you achieve the right results of the attack. And I'm not so unhappy when I see the Iranians really afraid of what Israel will do, and I can put them in this situation for a period.
Yeah, lastly, I'm struck by this. I'm just going through the English-speaking websites, looking at the Arab website, Al Jazeera, Arab News, and things to that nature. There's not a lot of criticism of Israel. And it seems as though you guys might have more friends than anyone knows in the area, and Iran might have more enemies.
You're absolutely right. And, vis-a-vis the Palestinians, they are still at least on the surface and not under the table. And they support the Palestinians very much. When it's come to Hezbollah in Lebanon, they are with us. When it's come to Iran, they are even pushing us to destroy the nuclear program. Because remember another date, which was September 2019, when Iran attacked the main oil field of Saudi Arabia. And they are terrified from Iran. And unfortunately, once again, the U.S. haven't come to the help. So if we will do a coalition of the U.S., Israel, and the Gulf state, we can really defeat Iran. And this should be the goal.
I hear you. General, I hope so. This is a very critical time. But what Israel's done, I'm just in awe of. in a very coming up on the October 7th anniversary after that horrific attack. Thanks so much, General. Appreciate it. When we come back, we'll take some calls. 1-866-408-7669.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Those greedy companies are making billions of dollars, and they don't want to share. That's why we're out here now fighting for a contract. We're going to fight for it, and we're going to win it. Or this portal will never open up again. From here to Houston, I'm not playing games here.
Well, he's not playing games. He doesn't have to. At the end of the day, he can go back to one of his mansions. That's Harold Baggett. He's running the Port Authority Union. He makes $900,000 on the books. He has a $2 million home, a $1.4 million home over in Highland Beach. According to Elon Musk, he's got more yachts than he has. How do you do that? I know years ago, according to reports, he was alleged to be part of a crime family. He was found not guilty with that, but he certainly sounds like a thug. Anybody who wants their side known and expressed, and I'm sure he's got a point of view that might be effective and needed to be relayed, he should not be doing his own PR work. Listen to him. I'm just going to hang out as long as possible. I'm going to make sure that everybody pays the price. Listen, the management you have a problem with has offered you a 50% raise over the next 6 years. You want to ban automation. Are you insane? Here's more. Cut 28.
Nobody knew what the longshoremen were. We didn't get respected, but now we will. Now we will when they find out malls are going to shut down because goods can't come in. Car salesmen are going to get laid off. But guess what? Everything that comes in this country comes from the containers off these ships that my men work. And I want the world to know it.
They learned during
COVID.
Don't
come after us saying we're greedy. Go after those greedy that own these companies in Europe. Go after them. They're sitting over there taking $4 billion bonuses for themselves at Christmas time. That's got to stop.
Why? If you are a worker, you're management, you work your way up, you become a foreman. That's the way it works. Go to another company then. And I just don't see it. You want to be part of revenue sharing? You want something like baseball? But right away, you just say you want to more. Doubling your money is not enough? So where is the transportation secretary? Where's the commerce secretary? Where's the president? Where's the vice president? Invisible. As usual, Pete Buttigieg, invisible. Cut 31.
It's a big issue. This needs to get resolved. We've been in touch with the different parties, urging them to bridge their differences. In particular, urging these ocean carriers, which again have become extremely profitable in recent years, to put forward an offer that is enough to bring the union back to the table and get this hammered out.
Why are you waiting until the strike? Why? Because you're with Governor Waltz, getting him ready for a debate. You're with Vice President Kamala Harris, getting her ready for a debate. You're doing Sunday shows. Can you ever do your job? Is there ever a bigger disaster than the mayor from South Bend? Oh, yeah, Gina Raimondo, not going to get her hands dirty in this. Commerce Secretary, the president, I'm siding with the union. That's a way to negotiate, picking a side.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have so much on our plate. It's overwhelming. It was one of those times where I put my top three on the board. I sent out four or five, and I said, "Guy, you pick them. I can't pick them." That's what's going on. And meanwhile, the President of the United States finally going today to Tallahassee, not even North Carolina, to check out Helene a week later. I'm just fascinated. I read the New York Times, and they say, the Vice President and President put everything on hold in order to focus on the hurricane. No, you didn't. Are you nuts? You have not put anything on hold. You took the weekend off, made some aside comments on Monday, have been looking at maps for a couple of days. You said you were on the phone for 2 hours. That's not enough. Sorry. And now you go into the zone. And I watch Corey Mills. What's he doing? As usual, the congressman from Florida is getting his own chopper, his own unit, his own money, and flying in, helping people out. Only this time it's America, it's not Haiti, and it's not Afghanistan. Again, we leave people stranded everywhere with this administration. Sometimes you try not to and it just doesn't work. And you say, well, you know, I thought ahead of time this happened. You just caught me by surprise. But they are quick to talk about climate change. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I have no idea. It makes zero sense to me why Biden would take Iran's nuclear facilities off the table publicly. Why is it so hard to say all options are on the table and we stand with our ally Israel?
Congressman Michael Waltz, he is 100% correct. The one menace in the Middle East, it is Iran. And now they're more vulnerable than ever. And now it's time for Israel to retaliate. And you're taking their nuclear facilities off the table? I hope Bibi does what he does best, and that's ignore Biden.
Number two.
On the hurricane, Mr. President, why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours.
The president did exactly what a president in this moment needs to do. There are three major events, if you will, happening all at the same time.
There is. Deal with it. You might have to be president in the last month. This is anyone in charge. The port strike stopped shipping up and down the East Coast a week after Hurricane Helene's death toll rising and victims still waiting for organized and massive government help. Imagine what could have gotten done if the president wasn't at the beach and the VP not on the campaign trail.
Number one.
I think the momentum has shifted towards Trump. I think it will stay that way unless the Democrats try to manufacture something that we don't know about right now. And that could easily happen. At any moment, they could try to shift something.
That is Matt Towery. I got to get the election analysis. I can't get enough of it. 32 days till Election Day. Money pouring in for the Trump camp. They're still being outraised by the Harris camp. And the battleground states are too close to call. I sense, though, momentum's with 45, and we know what's happening Saturday. Saturday is going to be in Butler, the site of the assassination attempt, the first one, which the more we look at, the more questions we have. Let's bring in one of the best in the business, deep thinker Mark Thiessen. You know, he's a Washington Post columnist, a successful podcast host. His column out today, Trump wants to make deterrence and really legal immigration great again, gives a perspective using his access to the Trump camp on what's substantially they're looking to do. Mark, welcome back. I got to bring you to Israel. I know it's a passion of yours, the Middle East. I know how the book you wrote about terrorism. I know that you've been a speechwriter during the most challenging years in Iraq. You know about Iran's role in creating tumult there. Why in a million years would President Biden say this? Cut 32.
Would you support an attack on Iran's nuclear sites by Israel?
The answer is no. I think there's things we'll be discussing with the Israelis what they're going to do, but all seven of us agree that they have a right to respond, but they should respond in proportion.
Mark, your witness.
What's proportional to raining missiles down on Israeli civilians? I mean, would they just bomb Tehran indiscriminately the way Tehran tried to bomb them? No, what's proportionate is launching a strike that is going to cripple the Iranian regime's ability to support terror. Imagine if Iran had a nuclear weapon right now, what the world would look like. The impunity with which they could attack Israel and attack other countries in the region, the impunity with which they could spread terror. Look, Bibi, has learned a lesson, and you're seeing a very different way in which they are going after this this prosecution of Hezbollah compared to the last year against Hamas. And over the last year with Hamas, they allowed the Biden administration to constrain them. And to slow their operations and to constrain them from executing a fully decapitating strike. And they've just decided that we're not doing that anymore. And the way they have systematically gone about, first of all, starting to take out Hamas leaders, including inside Iran, and then now decapitating Hezbollah. They have eliminated the entire Hezbollah leadership. They have hit thousands of Hezbollah operatives with these pager and, yeah, and walkie-talkie strikes. They are delivering a devastating blow to them. And I will tell you something. You know, Joe Biden ought to be very careful, because never until Joe Biden became president did Iran directly attack Israel. They've now done it twice on Biden's watch. They always attacked them through proxies, but they never had the temerity to launch a direct attack on Israel, and they're now doing it because Joe Biden's weakness is emboldening them. And what Bibi is doing, Bibi is in the last month, is attaining Churchillian status when it comes to how he's prosecuting this war. This is the most resolute leadership we have seen in a time of war and responding to threats that I've seen, quite frankly, since Reagan. You know, God bless him. I hope he takes the gloves off. I hope he hits the nuclear program. I hope he delivers a devastating blow to the Iranians.
By the way, still many of those rockets did fail as they studied what they tried to do. Now,
thank God for Ronald Reagan and ballistic missile defense and all the Democrats who oppose ballistic missile defense and laughed at Star Wars and all the rest of it.
And Rumsfeld.
Ought to be careful. Exactly. And Rumsfeld. Exactly.
So there's so much to go over before we move out of the region. Hamas has lost their number two man. Sinwar has lost his right-hand man. So he continues to isolate himself. We understand with the hostages, the coward that he is in Hamas. So Gaza has been destroyed, and Hamas made a statement. They say they're disappointed. According to they talked to NBC, they're disappointed by the lack of support from many Middle Eastern countries. Only Iran has supported them. Now, wait a second. There's a lack of outrage in all of this. Jordan has helped last time, and Saudi Arabia helped last time knock those missiles out of the sky. There's no condemnation of Israel. We know that Iran is the problem. It doesn't work for their population to come out and praise Israel. But right now, Israel is doing the dirty work for the West and for them who want to make money. Qatar wants to make money. Saudi Arabia wants to make money. They want to establish trade deals with Europe and with us. And they want to and they want to expand the Abraham Accords. October 7th stopped that. So now Israel, who does a great job ignoring Joe Biden, has to do. I think there's a window because Hezbollah is on their back. Hamas is on their back now. And they've already taken their shot. They have a brand new president. The Ayatollah is cowering in some bunker. This has to be the moment where they destroy the weapons program, blow up the oil wells, take out the ballistic missile sites. They have to do it.
100%. You're absolutely right. Look, this is what the Biden administration does. Is when you got the enemy on the ground, they say take your foot off their necks. Look, did you see the video a few weeks ago of the Iranian president looking up at the sky he kept looking up. What was he looking up at? He was looking at the Bibi. He was looking up at the Israelis. He's afraid. They're in there. They're in his head.
They are.
I mean, if you're an Iranian, Israel just killed the leader of Hamas inside Tehran in an IRGC safe house after he had just met with the supreme leader. Bibi said in his speech at the UN to the Iranians, "We can reach any quarter of Tehran. There is no place that you are safe." And the Iranians know this. This is the time to finish the fight. They got to take out Hezbollah. They got to destroy them. They got to destroy set back the Iranian nuclear program, take out the ballistic missiles, and put these people back. And everybody in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf, I don't care what they're saying publicly or not, they are cheering on the Israelis because they know the biggest threat to the Persian Gulf, not just to Israel, but to all the Gulf states, is Iran. And they will quietly be cheering Bibi on as he does this.
So I want you to hear Nancy Pelosi, this relic, cut 38.
I'm not going to come on this show and say Israel should attack the nuclear facilities in Iran. I've never really been for that. I was for a new diplomatic solution, which President Obama successfully put forth to reduce the nuclear capability and possibilities of Iran. And I think as much as we can do diplomatically, we should avoid a wider war.
So we had to go back to that deal. That was just brought up again by a major general I had on last hour. What about that nuclear deal, Mark? What should we know about that?
It was a disaster. It basically endorsed the Iranian nuclear program. It didn't constrain it. It enabled it. And it gave them billions and billions and billions of dollars, which enabled them to spread terror throughout the world. When Donald Trump came into office, he got rid of the nuclear deal. He imposed crippling sanctions on the Iranians. And they had – even the New York Times was reporting that Hezbollah and Hamas and all the terror networks around the world were complaining that they weren't getting money from Iran because they had no money to give. it was crippling their ability to spread terror around the world. Iran was on its heels when Joe Biden took office, and he lifted them up off the mat. That's what he does. He lets our enemies up off the mat. That's the and here's the thing that they don't understand, and also something that, quite frankly, the isolationist right doesn't understand about Donald Trump. Joe Biden, the reason why you have wars in Europe and the Middle East today is because Joe Biden is terrified of escalation.
Yep.
What Donald Trump did is he made our enemies afraid of escalation. He imposed a policy of escalation dominance, where if you threaten the United States or our allies or our friends around the world or sought to do something destabilizing, he told you he's going to jump to the top of the escalation ladder and dared you to follow him. And at the same time, opened a path for negotiation. And that worked. He told Vladimir Putin that don't you dare attack Ukraine. Or you will face the consequences. He told Xi Jinping, don't you dare attack Taiwan or you will face consequences. He told the Iranians, if you kill a single American, we are going to make you pay. We're not going to hold your proxies responsible. We're going to hold you responsible. And when they crossed his red line and killed an American, Qasem Soleimani, and then he told the Iranians, I have picked out 52 sites inside Iran in honor of the 52 hostages you took in 1979, and if you retaliate, I'm going to hit Iran proper. And they back down. The way you avoid escalation is making your enemies fear escalation, not being afraid of escalation yourself.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how this is turning out, but Israel's tried everything, and this latest seems to be working. But Naftali Bennett, who's a political rival and former prime minister, said this in today's Wall Street Journal. They say right now Iran is naked. They don't have the ability to protect themselves. Israel has the greatest opportunity in 50 years to change the face of the Middle East. I think he's 100% right. I always would acquiesce to the former prime minister of Israel, knowing if this is done, it would put Netanyahu there for his life. He sees the window. This window is never there. You don't have to tell me what you're going to do, Joe Biden. If you don't, we're not commenting on military operations, what I recommend to Israel. That's a fine response. You don't have to tell me. Whatever makes that military operation more effective, I understand you can't be transparent on every question. Why would he choose just to say that after 50 plus years in diplomatic relations with former chairman of foreign relations? It just makes me think of total incompetence.
Well, because he's been incompetent for 50 years. I mean, he's been wrong on every foreign policy issue in his entire career.
Right.
Of course, you don't say publicly. And quite frankly, I think, honestly, what Bibi ought to do is listen to what Joe Biden tells him and just do the opposite. Because he's been wrong on everything. He's the one who's been restraining him from going after Hamas and dragging this war out. They should have just unleashed the fury and finished this thing in Gaza in a matter of months instead of dragging it out for a year. And that's what the Biden administration does. He's done the same thing in Ukraine. If Biden had given the Ukrainians all the weapons he's dribbled out over 3 years and just done it in those first months when the Russians were on their heels and pulling out of the outskirts of Kyiv, the war would be over by now and Ukraine would have won. This guy has no strategic capability to see a problem and find a solution. He's afraid of his own shadow, and that's how wars are lost and more civilians die as a result.
Lastly, two rapid questions. Number one, what is the impact of Jack Smith's new indictment that he handed over to Judge Chunkin, who made it public, number one? And number two, thoughts of the president going to Butler on Saturday?
First of all, I think at this point the indictments are they're baked in the cake in terms of politics. Everybody knows where they stand on it, and nothing's going to happen before the election. So if Trump wins, all that stuff's going away. In terms of Butler, I think it's great that he's going back to Butler, and the fact that we've had, they've tried to kill him twice now. it's just an absolute atrocity. And, the fact that the Secret Service allowed this to happen not once but twice, when they you've got an active Iranian plot to kill Donald Trump, and they let some deranged teenager get a shot off at him. I mean, imagine what a well-trained, sophisticated terrorist operative might do. I hope that they've given him presidential level protection right now, because if God help us, what would happen to this country if Donald Trump died? If you think the political acrimony is bad now, imagine what would happen. I mean,
especially because terrifying. They've telegraphed it. They've telegraphed it, too. No one saw JFK's coming. Lincoln was in the middle of a war, but still the war was over. They shot McKinley in a random line, but they didn't try to shoot him three separate times. It was one time and done. So this would be unbelievable and thinkable, and let's hope it doesn't happen. But they all worried about it, and everybody knows. And so was Trump worried about it, by the way. But he's soldiering on. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Take care.
All right. I only need another hour with him, and then I'll be able to get it all out. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met.
Wow, that's going to be a big relief. $750 from FEMA. Wow. And she, by the way, she shows up, windbreaker, big table, reads everything. Does she have any instincts at all in these emergencies? And by the way, it happened last Thursday. I'm checking the calendar. I think that's a complete week. Goes to FEMA, leaves, goes to FEMA, leaves. This is it. Do you understand that the American people look at this as a big audition? She wants to be the agent of change. She doesn't want to be vice president. And when she is vice president, do you understand, does anyone in your, and they're so experienced, David Plouffe, whatever you think of him, all these people are all from the Obama years, Brian Fallon, does anyone think to yourself, you know what, Ms. Vice President, just be vice president. People need to see you in charge. Joe Biden will step aside. Side note, everyone's writing that Joe Biden is extremely insulted. He's not asked to go on the stump more, number one. Number two, that she's not more proud of her record. She never talks about her record and the 4 years in the White House or Joe Biden's record. Evidently, he's really upset about it. No kidding. He's the last one to know. It hasn't been a good 4 years. And blaming Trump for 4 years didn't work.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's an extraordinary filing because it fills in 1,000 details of what exactly the plan was to overthrow the 2020 presidential election. And it goes meticulously state by state, explaining the defendant Donald Trump's various calls into state election officials and Republican officials in order to get them to set aside the real popular election.
So that is Jamie Raskin, the utter definition of partisanship, who wasn't enough to talk about January 6th for 3 years and do a primetime show about it. Now, Jack Smith relentlessly marginalized on the documents case, marginalized after immunity came down from the Supreme Court, puts out a new 164-page report proving, he says, the actions of Donald Trump in these illustrated episodes show he was working on his own behalf. One of the passages says that proving this was a campaign event, not a presidential event, even though he was president, he walked out on the stage to YMCA not to hail to the chief. With me right now is Andy McCarthy. Andy, I knew we weren't done. I thought the word was 60 days out of election, you don't do stuff like this. Could you tell us what changed yesterday afternoon?
Well, I don't think anything really changed, Brian, but that's because I think, and I suspect you feel the same way, that the objective of Smith's prosecutions from the first instant, the indictment of them, the timing of that, and the pushing to have, 2 to 3 month trials that would commence in the springtime of 2024 and go right up to Election Day. The whole point of this exercise was to influence the outcome of the election. You know, this is not like some fantastic new scheme that nobody knew about, right? It's not like the allegations that came out about the mayor in New York City last week, where, everybody was stunned to hear this stuff for the first time. the January 6th events were watched by America in real time.
Yes.
As they happened.
Then we watched. Then we watched the trial, the hearings.
Well, yeah, but first, even before that, we had an impeachment. We had impeachment trial in the Senate during which the whole country was basically shut down except for the impeachment trial for weeks. And then we had that very slickly produced, made-for-television House January 6th committee hearings that Jamie Raskin got to star in. I'm always amused that he becomes a central figure in this since he baselessly denied Trump's victory in the 2016 election and tried to get the votes in one of the states suppressed at the joint session of Congress. And if what Jack Smith's theory is here is actually a prosecutable theory, it would be people like Jamie Raskin who would be, you know, would have real things to be concerned about. So to have him be a central figure, I think is just is rich. But look, this is stuff that's been rehashed again and again. But the point of all this, the objective of it, was to get this information into the public domain. Now, obviously, they hope to do it with a spectacular trial that would have intense media coverage, and at the end of which a Washington, D.C. jury would quickly convict Trump. So they'd have all the information and they'd have the conviction, and they thought that would be very damaging to him in the run-up to the election, and perhaps it would have been. But they didn't get their way because Smith underestimated the difficulty and the complexity of trying to prosecute a former president. The Supreme Court basically put the brakes on it. But the way they put the brakes on it gave Judge Chutkan and Smith a pretext to publicize what his whole case was. They told Judge Chutkan, you need to go through these allegations in the indictment and sort out what's a private act that can be prosecuted versus what's an official act. And she used that exercise as a pretext to have Smith basically do a book-length presentation of his entire case and then publish it to the world, and especially the media Democrat complex, 34 days before the election.
So let's think about this, Andy. Everyone says, the judge, oh, don't worry about, you know, who she got the nomination from, who put her on the bench. She's got to be fair. Doesn't this show you that we already knew she wasn't going to be fair? And doesn't this just prove it?
Well, I think you can't always leap from, you know, who's the president who nominated the judge to how the judge is going to act. But let's face it, in these political cases, there's a high percentage of the time, especially for judges who are appointed by Democrats, that they rule in a very predictable way. But with this particular judge, I don't think it was just that President Obama nominated her. She's not been shy about being very critical of Trump in connection with a number of the January 6th prosecutions, the Capitol riot prosecutions that she, like all the other judges in the District of Columbia, are presiding over. You know, she's made some very cutting remarks about Trump. So she kind of wears her hostility to him on her sleeve,
on her robe,
and I don't think, on her robe. That's better. You know, so I don't think anybody should be surprised by this. And look, she really tried to help Smith get this case to trial. You know, he wasn't putting the pedal to the metal by himself. She was, you know, in every way trying to get this thing to trial. So I think it's pretty obvious where she's coming from. And again, I don't think this is surprising because the purpose here was to influence the election.
It looks like they got Mike Pence's notes. And one of his notes, Mike notes, it was said to him that evidently when they said, you know, Mike Pence is in danger, he said, I don't care, or something to that nature. All right. Trump say he never said that he was in the dining room. I never said that. OK, this is more of the sensationalistic things. But we go back to what Merrick Garland said in June. Merrick Garland put out a memo titled Election Year Sensitivities, warning that even the appearance of partisan efforts, would not be permitted. He noted this. So even though it's an unsaid rule, an unwritten rule, they were worried about another Comey situation. Then when Comey came up and got the Anthony Weiner laptop and saw more emails off an unauthorized user with sensitive documents on Hillary Clinton's laptop. It ended up being from her assistant. That was a former husband. So he goes, I just got to tell you, this is what's out there. They said they want to avoid this, and here it goes again. Jack Smith, instead of being a prosecutor, is being an evangelist. He should be going for justice. He should get the right verdict in theory, right? He doesn't need to go get Trump. He needs to find justice. But he's obsessed with Trump. It's so clear and obsessed and probably astounded that he's got an excellent shot of sidelining his court case. This is so personal and it's so obvious.
Well, you know, look, they say all this high-minded stuff all the time, but that doesn't mean we can ignore reality. So the reality here is that Smith's appointment was political from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, before you get to any of this, what happened here was they wanted to prosecute Trump at the Biden-Harris Justice Department. They knew that Trump would say that Biden was exploiting his control of the government's law enforcement apparatus to go after his political enemy. So what Garland did was bring Smith in, even though there's no conflict of interest between the Biden-Harris Justice Department and Trump. There was a conflict of interest between the Biden-Harris Justice Department and the Hunter Biden case, where Garland refused for years to appoint a special counsel, right, and was forced to do so only when the sweetheart plea deal they tried to give to Hunter blew up. But there was no conflict of interest with Trump. There was no need for a special counsel. But they brought in Smith so they could pretend that Biden and Garland had nothing to do with the prosecutions of Trump, which was a farce from the beginning. So I don't think Smith became political. I think this was what he was brought in to do and to give them political cover. And as for all the stuff about the 60-day rule, you know, I've always said the 60-day rule is totally arbitrary. It's not really a rule. But at the same time, the same standard should apply to everyone. And Smith announced months ago that he didn't think the 60-day rule applied to Trump because everybody already knew that he was indicted, which, of course, if that was true, if that was what Smith was thinking, then what was the big deal about getting the case to trial before Election Day? If everybody already knew this stuff, what was the big hurry, right? So they say what they say, Brian, but, you know, when you get down to brass tacks, what's Kamala Harris going to run on? The Biden-Harris record? They're going to run on January 6th because that's what they figure they've got. And that's the reason, look, we watched those CBS anchors at the vice president's debate the other night. What did they close with? Something, you know, China,
January 6th.
Ukraine, January 6th. That's what they closed because that's
great point.
Their campaign.
Great point.
That's
and Andy, campaign. A couple other things I'd like to get to. Do you know when those judges will give a verdict on whether they can overturn the 454 million dollar judgment against the Trump Organization?
There's no timeline where they're required sometime, you know, some specific time after oral argument. Oral argument's what we heard last week, and that was where we heard that the judges obviously have trouble with the case. And they're not, happily, they're not too keen, it appears, with what Tish James did here in this fraud case. But there's no required time that they have to rule. All we know is that, like, James can't execute on the judgment, meaning she can't try to collect the money from Trump until after the appeal has run its full course. And I think however the appeal comes out in the appellate division, and I would be encouraged if I were Trump watching the oral argument last week, there's still another stage. It would then go up to the highest court in New York, the Court of Appeals. So it's a long way to run this appeal yet, Brian.
He's just holding out that bond there. So real quick, for people outside New York City that are stunned by what's going on here with everyone resigning around the mayor, they say that they may, and I was just surprised by this. He was in court on Wednesday for the corruption case, and prosecutors say there may be more charges. How unusual is that we're indicting a sitting mayor, powerful position, and we're not even done charging him. We might have more charges. I thought you have to have this complete.
No, you don't have to. I mean, I was in a lot of cases in that office, the Southern District of New York, where they superseded indictments. It usually happens in violent crime cases because it's in violent crime cases where you got to get the people off the street before you may have finished your investigation. So you indict them on a small number of things at the beginning and then you expand the charges once you have your investigation nailed down. This is not a violent crime case, a political corruption case. So you would expect they'd have a more complete understanding of it. But look, they're just now grabbing people's phones and other stuff. So they're still doing their investigation. And I would caution people, by the end of this, I have a feeling what the Southern District is homing in on is the contracts or the services that were provided to all these 220,000 plus migrants who have flooded New York City. You know, Adams is out there saying he's being prosecuted to retaliate because he's the one who spotlighted the administration's yes. weakness on border security. I think they want to shove that where the sun don't shine. They're looking into how the city handled these contracts and whether anyone was skimming off the top in Adams' administration. If they can prove that, they'd love to be able to put that in an indictment.
And lastly, Danny Penny, the former Marine charged with the death of that homeless man, he's has a suppression hearing. What are they looking for? They evidently there's some international citizens that were on that subway that thought it was necessary for Penny to take them down, but they don't want to testify. I'm not sure why they don't even want to hop on a Zoom if that would work. Number two is they want to be able to get this guy's past drug use entered into court. Of course it should. Don't you think so? Doesn't that show a compromised system that where maybe if you put you or I in a headlock, we're suppressed? If you put a drug abuser in a headlock, he dies?
I really think in a murder case, with the stakes that are involved in a murder case, that courts normally would lean in the direction of letting the defendant put in anything that might be relevant. And I must say, if I were a prosecutor, in a case like that, I'd be most concerned about creating a record that I stopped the defendant from proving stuff that's obviously relevant and might make a difference to the jury. I suspect that with the people who may not be available who gave statements, but they may now be gone and not available to testify, what they're trying to sort out is whether the statements that they've already given can come in, that is, can be admitted into evidence. And to the extent they're exculpatory of Penny, I imagine what the state is saying is that the hearsay version shouldn't come in, that these people should be required to come in and testify.
Got it. All right, Andy, thanks so much. It was interesting to see how much traction. MSNBC finally had a lead. They did not want to talk about the vice presidential debate. They got an excuse. But to avoid the port strike, to avoid the damage from the hurricane, seeing the president wait a week to go, and now we have 31 days to go, it's hard to imagine people going to pretend as if we're getting new information about January 6th. But I'm sure it'll happen. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Brian.
Go get him. Listen, we come back. I'll have a few minutes on the other end, so get aboard 1-866-408-7669 or go to briankilmeade.com.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hurricane Helene has been a storm literally of historic proportions. The damage is still being assessed, but many people are still unaccounted for. So I'm here to say the United States, the nation, has your back. The nation has your back. We're not leaving your back on your feet completely.
Well, you can't even get to them right now. So that rings hollow. It's a week later. You're not even in North Carolina. Today, you're in Tallahassee. So I know I don't want you any closer because of the footprint you bring. But don't tell me doing 2 hours over the weekend on a hurricane that hit on Thursday and you show up a week later and want everyone to think you got their back. That's just not the case. Listen, let's go to the phones. Right now, listening on WOKV is John. What's on your mind?
Brian, you are exactly right. And let's even compound that even a little bit deeper. They have been stealing funds, and you're going to see that in the city of Asheville and North Carolina and FEMA and the Democrat governor. All the money in FEMA funds has been siphoned to pay for relocation efforts for immigrants. And that's why it's important to understand the policies that come from D.C. and the president. This is the trickle effect or the domino effect, where they mess with one thing, and then when a catastrophe happens, then it impacts that catastrophe because it's the wrong thing to do.
You're talking about $650 million that go to illegal immigrants and all their processing and their housing, and they just, Homeland Security moved it. And then this idiot, Mayorkas, one of the worst next to Buttigieg you could possibly have hired, said, yeah, we're out of money. Really? You're out of money? That's what you say? Well, the Speaker Johnson said we just put $20 million into their coffers before we left Washington. You're out of money. Didn't you save any money for the end of or the beginning of hurricane season? And, of course, this is climate change. You have to be an idiot to think there's no climate change. Yes, no. Hurricanes happen before and after. Incredible. Hey, hope to see you. 7 o'clock on Sunday, October 20th. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Early start. End of football. The 4 o'clock games. Just show up in Peekskill, New York. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Happy to be bringing the latest news, and thanks so much for making this the best-growing radio talk show around that you'll ever see. A lot going on this hour. We're going to be talking to Garrett Ventry, founder and president of GRV Strategies and former senior advisor to Senator Chuck Grassley and other great politicians. Brian Hook at the bottom of the hour. Why is the Ayatollah trying to kill him, like President Trump, John Bolton, and Mike Pompeo and Robert O'Brien? Because they took out Soleimani, and they are the sworn enemy of that outlaw nation, and that is Iran. Brian Hook, sir, senior advisor to Rex Tillerson, senior advisor to Mike Pompeo, and help take out and help put Iran on their back. And they haven't forgiven the Trump administration for that, and they fear them taking power, in my view. So before we get to Garrett, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I have no idea. It makes zero sense to me why Biden would take Iran's nuclear facilities off the table publicly. Why is it so hard to say all options are on the table and we stand with our ally Israel?
Why is it? I don't get it. It makes no sense, but that's Joe Biden. Time to strike. Historic opportunity to take down the West Middle East menace. And all Biden can say is they better not take out, I don't know, their nuclear facility. I hope BB does what he does best, and that ignores Joe.
Number two.
I'm a hurricane, Mr. President. Why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours.
The president did exactly what a president in this moment needs to do. There are three major events, if you will, happening all at the same time.
Right. That is it. If in time of crisis, a president should be on the phone for 2 hours. Is anyone in charge? The port strike stopped shipping down, up and down the East Coast. A week after the Hurricane Helene, death toll is rising, now up to 140, and victims still waiting for organized and massive government help. Imagine what could have gotten done if the president would just be president and the vice president was on the campaign trail.
Number one.
I think the momentum has shifted towards Trump. I think it will stay that way unless the Democrats try to manufacture something that we don't know about right now. And that could easily happen. At any moment, they could try to shift something.
Like, for example, dredging up the January 6th case with Jack Smith, 32 days to Election Day, money pouring into the Trump camp while still being outraised by Harris. And the battleground states, all too close to call. But is momentum with 45, as Matt Towery said? Let's ask Garrett Ventry. Garrett, you were sitting there through the whole primaries the season. You were sitting in our studio. We were trying to figure out, can anyone make a run at Trump while analyzing what's happening in the debate stage? Who has the momentum now?
Hey, Brian, always great to be with you. Thanks for having me back on the show. Listen, I think President Trump has the momentum here, and there's a couple reasons why. Number one, people continue to be dissatisfied with the Biden-Harris policies on immigration and the economy. They still think prices are higher, and they're correct about that. They think that the southern border is out of control. And then they're seeing, just like you were pointing out earlier in your segment here, going through some of the news, big news stories, they see chaos everywhere in the world, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Gaza, whether it's Israel, whether it's Iran. Whether it's what happened in Afghanistan a couple of years ago on Joe Biden's watch, the catastrophic withdrawal. So that's one reason why. Number two, if you look to the head-to-head matchup here, if you look in 2016 and 2020, when President Trump ran. He's in a stronger position in the polling now than he was in 2016 and 2020. And what do I mean by that? I'll give you two very specific examples very quickly. In 2016, 538, ABC's kind of polling average there that a lot of people see as a gold standard, had Hillary Clinton beating him in Pennsylvania by anywhere from 3 to 7 points in October. We all know Donald Trump ended up winning that state by one. He overperforms the polls. And in 2020, it had Joe Biden beating him in Wisconsin, that same ABC average, by over 8 points. Joe Biden won by less than 1% in Wisconsin. So the point is here, Donald Trump overperforms polls. And so for Harris, we're seeing these polls where it's, you know, Harris up one here, Trump up one, Trump up two. If you're Harris, that's a bad place to be because Donald Trump is more popular than he's ever been. He's winning on the issues that matter. And again, he overperforms these polls significantly in past years in 16 and 20. And the last thing I'll say is this. There's a Hispanic voter poll that came out from NBC and Telemundo that shows Harris only has a 14-point lead on Trump with Hispanic voters. And why that is significant is that Obama beat Romney by 40 with Hispanic voters, and Hillary and Biden also beat Trump by over 30 points. So Harris only winning by 14 shows that significant movement to Trump there that's going to be hard to overcome for her.
I think you're right. And one thing about Hispanic vote, the women are still with Harris. The men, it's a tie in the last poll. So it's pretty amazing. It's a gender situation. Uh-huh. And by the way, Garrett, I was like many other people. After Mitt Romney lost, even though he had Mexican roots, they did an autopsy, and Reince Priebus led it, and they said, you know, after Michael Steele destroyed the party, he said, right, we've got to stop talking so tough on the border. Man, was that wrong. Correct?
It was absolutely wrong. And a lot of those folks, you've seen an increase of in that Hispanic poll that was taken from Latino voters is – in that same poll we're talking about here that NBC did that shows Trump very much closing that gap, it shows that they actually, since 2012, are seeing an influx of immigration as a problem. They're also – these are people who do not believe that when Trump is talking about some of the bad actors that are coming here illegally, they don't think that that means that Trump thinks that they are bad people, right? So that's another part here. But these are people you got to remember – Hispanic Americans, folks who've come here legally, gone through the process to be an American, pay their taxes, did it the right way, those people don't like seeing people coming here illegally, skipping the line and not doing it the right way and breaking the rules. And so I think that plays with this as well here. Trump is not anti-immigrant. He's just anti-illegal immigration and upholding our laws, which a majority of Americans agree with right now.
Garrett, I don't have to tell you what happened with Katrina, and we could go back and reconstruct it in present. Bush, I remember, thought the governor was going to be like his brother in Florida. Take control. You need help. I'm here. Because Jeb Bush was great at it. And the mayor was terrible. The governor was terrible. Katrina was much worse than anyone thought. And they're still bailing themselves out to a degree. Though Helene hits, the second most costly hurricane maybe in our history. Joe Biden goes to the beach, even though it happened on Thursday. And then listen to some of the questions he got and the outrage he shows. This is how he handles a crisis. And this is also how Kamala Harris handles it. She stayed on the campaign trail and went to a fundraiser. Cut 17.
I'm a hurricane, Mr. President. Why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this weekend?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours yesterday and the day before as well. Oh, telephone.
On Helene, people in Western North Carolina were drowning in their houses this weekend. Others were losing everything. President Biden was at his beach house, and Vice President Harris was hosting political fundraisers on the West Coast.
The president did exactly what a president in this moment needs to do. There are three major events, if you will, happening all at the same time. And this is a president that spent a lot of his time in the Situation Room with the vice president. It matters who sits behind that resolute desk. It matters what the leadership looks like.
How does the leadership look, Garrett? And partisanship aside, there's no way he's engaged. And you got the Israeli situation, the port strike going on, and Helene.
100%. I mean, that is such a disgraceful clip on a number of reasons, right? You've got over, you know, almost 200 Americans dead. You have many without power. You have homes and businesses destroyed, communities that have been ripped through. There's a lot of uncertainty and fear. and Joe Biden has the audacity to say he's working hard because he spent 2 hours on the phone. It's a total joke. Imagine telling a 9-to-5 worker, that right there, right? Someone who's just doing the regular job, let alone the president of the United States, who's supposed to be in charge of the federal government. And the response here, it's a total disgrace and lack of leadership. And you're saying the same thing with Vice President Harris. She has not done anything to tour any of this damage or really do anything here. She was at a fundraiser. She was doing political events. Biden was at his beach house, like was pointed out in this clip, and you pointed out as well. And President Trump here, just like with the Ohio train derailment, as you remember, too, was very smart to go there first before any Biden administration official did. He looked presidential. He offered support and resources.
Palestine,
exactly, from his own campaign and his own pocket. And so that is leadership people are looking for. They want a president who's on the clock 24/7. I don't even know who's running the White House right now, frankly, right? If you're only on the phone for 2 hours during a national response like this to a damaging hurricane that's killed almost 200 Americans that we know of, and net death toll, as you know, during these things sadly can rise as the dust settles here. There is no leadership here at home from Biden and Harris, and there's no leadership abroad. And the other thing, Brian, real quick, that's really I find funny here about the vice president is she acts like this entire debate and her entire campaign, she's been running here for a few months where, again, she's got no votes for any of this thing they appointed her. But the interesting thing is she's acting like she's an outsider. She's the current vice president. She's fixed none of the problems over the last 3.5 years, and I think it's been smart that President Trump continues to point that out.
I will say this. The New York Times also covering them. Listen to this. Biden, Vice President Harris have effectively dropped everything to schedule visits with the victims of the storm, despite having just 34 days to campaign against Donald Trump. They don't really mention that President Trump on Wednesday, after receiving a briefing from the federal emergency from FEMA earlier this week, they don't mention that Trump was there. Do you know his GoFundMe page is raised over $4 million? He was in Georgia. Do you know North Carolina and sections of Western North Carolina and Georgia residents, they've been stranded for days without water, forced to wash their dishes and bathe in creeks. So this is happening while you're not allowing private drones, and private helicopters to take things into their own hands. And they sit, and Fort Bragg is right there. Fort Liberty is right there. Why is the Army not helping its own people?
No, it's insane. This starts at the top, right? This is a federal government response here. And when you have the president at a beach house and you have the vice president doing political fundraisers, these things don't get done. Now, could you imagine if there was a crisis like this, Brian, that had and Donald Trump was president, and instead of doing a response in any way, shape, or form, he was golfing? Could you imagine the outrage that would happen here?
And it would be justified.
Correct. It would be. Exactly. The president of the United States should not, be on a phone or at a beach house or anything. They should be, in the Situation Room, meeting with FEMA, meeting with their cabinet secretaries, local leaders to get things done here. But the New York Times just loves to cover for Biden and Harris. This is the same New York Times that told us for years that it was insane for Donald Trump and his campaign to question, or any Republican or Fox News for that matter, to question if Biden was even mentally fit for the job. They covered for him for 3.5 years. Remember that.
So there's been no explanation.
Again, people have lost all they've lost all their credibility covering any of these things. People can open their two eyes and see this has been a failed response and failed leadership from Harris and Biden.
Simmering beneath the surface is the shutting down of ports up and down the East Coast. All the ports. I mean, right. And this lunatic that runs this idiot, this multimillionaire mysteriously who has two mansions and two yachts and drives a Bentley is running this union, turning down a 50% raise, wants a 70% raise. And now we have a situation where the president of the United States has basically sided with Harold Daggett. Listen to this clown. Cut 27.
Those greedy companies are making billions of dollars, and they don't want to share. That's why we're out here now fighting for a contract. We're going to fight for it, and we're going to win it. Or this portal will never open up again. From here to Houston. I'm not playing games here.
How does he get rich? Why does he make $900,000 on the books, probably more off? And how does he come floating in bragging that they're going to bring our country to its knees? What are they, holding us hostage?
No, it's absolutely insane. This guy's a complete lunatic, like you said, and Biden not stepping in there and, turning down these huge pay raises that would go to his workers, and that's a win for them, right? Everyone wants fair wages for our workers, and these people are working very important jobs to make our country work. And like you said, a 50% raise, I mean, that would be an incredible raise for a lot of these workers. So it's a shame that their union boss is this guy who, again, like you said, a 7,000-foot mansion, mm-hmm. a Bentley that you and I know both costs, you know, anywhere from like $200,000-$400,000 for that car, which is more than probably, you know, seven or eight of his workers combined are making maybe even in a year. So it's very unfortunate this is happening and bringing a right. You know, bringing the economy here really to the halt in terms of like our ports of entry. Those are very important things for obviously trade and getting goods into the U.S. So it is very it's just crazy that this lunatic's leading yeah. it and then Biden siding with them.
All right. Gareth Ventry, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
Crazy time. So you do have three major stories, but that's why you become president, because you think you're the best at solving these problems. And if you what is so bad about the White House? Why don't you want to stay? You were holding on to it, even though half your brain is addled. And now when you have only a month left, all you want to do is leave. When we come back, Brian Kilmeade, call the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. Then Brian Hook at the bottom of the hour. Why does Iran want to kill him too? You'll find out.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't think that small, narrow group of people wanted to see a fist fight. And so I think that the people who want the fist fight are the base of the Democratic Party. Mm. Democrats want to see someone get up there and give a knuckle sandwich to Donald Trump. That's what they want. But that is not the group of people who need this debate. Most people are already voting and already know what they want.
So that is the genius of Joy Reid on MSNBC talking about Tim Walz and J.D. Vance being collegial to each other and saying, I know every Democrat's mad at him, but you shouldn't be mad because independents and undecideds don't want to see the fisticuffs. But I, you know, I think it's a pretty amazing that she would actually say that Democrats just want to see Trump and Vance get punched in the mouth. Number one, the violent rhetoric is nonstop. By the way, Donald Trump going back to Butler this weekend. We're going to be live on Saturday night with One Nation. I'll be Saturday night at 9 o'clock. Got a great roster of guests. But I'm not just going to be covering Butler. I'm going to be covering what's happened with Israel. They might be bombing Iran by then. They don't like to wait much. And we might also be talking about the ongoing strikes as well as the Aleem recovery. And I'll have also a special guest, Tommy Lahren, will go over how it's all being covered, and take a look at the media portion of that. That's 9 o'clock on Saturday. 9 o'clock on Saturday. But a couple of things that are also happening that I think are significant, and that is what's happening with the actual election in 2023. So when you look at all this, I looked at the Cook Report this morning before we came on. Everything is within the margin of error in the battleground states. Here's Matt Towery of the Polling Plus podcast. He's the host of that. Listen to this, cut 11.
I think the momentum has shifted towards Trump. I think it will stay that way unless the Democrats try to manufacture something that we don't know about right now, and that could easily happen. At any moment, they could try to shift something. But so far, they're the ones facing the strike among the longshore dock workers. They're the ones who are not able to deal with the hurricane, and they're the ones who are dealing with the Middle East. And that's a big three-problem prong the Democrats have to deal with.
Right. And this is also an opportunity. If you can lead and you're really very rational, you got a good team around you, you might say to yourself, honey, you know what? I think I'm going to stick with this same team. They seem to know what they're doing. We got a natural crisis. We got a labor crisis. We got a Middle East crisis. I'm staying with them. But if you see what I've seen over the last week, you see our greatest ally feeling abandoned. They got to act on their own. And you see with these dock worker strike, they just automatically knee-jerk reaction. They side with the union and with Hurricane Helene. Is anyone encouraged about what they saw as the president's in Tallahassee and the vice president's talking to people in a huge desk, reading from her notes? That's not natural leadership. I look at Corey Mills outside a chopper in the hills of North Carolina helping people. That's leadership.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We also have to start looking at the adversarial challenges when it comes to Iran. As you know, the Ayatollah himself recently just posted a video that was alluding to the fact that they want to try another assassination, saying that revenge is imminent, even showing the Mar-a-Lago estates and the president playing golf. We need to take these threats very seriously, especially when we look at things like Mershan, who's the 46-year-old Pakistani who flew to Iran for a series of days, then to Houston, Texas, was stopped in Houston, Texas, and questioned by the FBI.
So that is Corey Mills, who, by the way, is in the hills of North Carolina with a chopper he paid for himself trying to save people with his crew, talking about the fear he has for the president and the real risk he's under. But he's not the only one. They're going after John Bolton, assassination attempts on Brian Hook, not attempts, excuse me, but promises Iran has threatened to that nature. Robert O'Brien, Mike Pompeo walks around with security. Brian Hook has played an invaluable role in Middle East affairs when it came to the Trump administration and joins us now. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
I mean, how is your life disrupted because of these threats?
It's been disrupted for about the last 4 years or so. Yeah, we've had federal protection. All the people that you mentioned and me, we've been under 24-hour protection by the federal government. So it's not easy, but it's sort of where we are. Unfortunately, the Biden administration lost deterrence against the Iranian regime, and you have an unprecedented situation where former U.S. diplomatic officials are under 24-hour protection against assassination threats by the Iranian regime.
Do you feel unprotected by this administration outside the Secret Service they afforded you?
No, it's just like as a foreign policy matter, unfortunately, the Biden administration came into office, Biden-Harris, and they just reversed everything that President Trump had done successfully. And he achieved deterrence against the Iranian regime. They were broke. They were weak. And now they're the opposite because President Biden, Harris, they haven't enforced the sanctions. They have kind of told Israel to fight with one hand tied behind its back. They put them under a partial arms embargo. They isolated the Saudis and the Emiratis. It's sort of like deja vu from the Obama years. They just don't understand how the Middle East works, and it's made the world a very dangerous place.
How much more experience do you think Joe Biden needs before he starts getting it? Here's what he said yesterday, and then we'll build off that. Now, there's going to be retaliation. Everyone agrees there should be retaliation. As Mark Thiessen just said, how about this? You want equal hits? Why don't Israel send 180 rockets into Iran? See how many they're able to block. Let's see how that goes. Here's Joe Biden yesterday. Cut 32.
You can support an attack on Iran's nuclear sites by Israel.
The answer is no. I think there's things we'll be discussing with the Israelis what they're going to do, but all seven of us agree that they have a right to respond, that they should respond in proportion.
So what is the wisdom of saying that? And anyway, whether you do support it, don't support it, what's the wisdom in answering that question? Where is it?
Not much wisdom. I mean, President Biden sort of reminds me of a guy who plays poker and then he shows you his cards.
Right.
It's just, he does this all the time. It's just no way to deter America's enemies or Israel's. And it just happens year in and year out. And, you know, Israel now is teaching Biden what deterrence looks like. And even in this moment where Israel has largely destroyed Hamas, they've decapitated Hezbollah, and now they're in a position to do a major strike on Iran that might change the regional balance of power almost in a way the Six-Day War did in 1967. They've got this great opportunity, and Biden is still wringing his hands over
trying to get a nuclear deal.
Yeah, he wants to get back in the Iran nuclear deal, yeah.
So Naftali Bennett came out and in the New York Times today, and they cite him and say, this is his, excuse me, the Wall Street Journal. He says, Hezbollah and Hamas are paralyzed temporarily, and Iran is exposed. Right now, they are naked. They don't have the ability to protect themselves. Israel has the greatest opportunity in 50 years to change the face of the Middle East. This is it. Bennett is hardly a Netanyahu fan. He used to have that job.
Yeah.
He sees what you see, what I see, what most see. If you have to escalate to de-escalate, and the only people that can protect Israel is Israel, but they're doing the work of the West and the U.S., what should we be doing?
We should be supporting Israel and everything they're doing. And there's so much we could be doing. as you said, Brian, I mean, this is a once in, you know, this the Iranian regime has been there since, what, for 42, 43 years. They've never been this weak. They've always been protected by Hezbollah and Hamas, and now they're neutered. And they're, I mean, Iran is largely naked right now, and Israel has the opportunity of a lifetime, as Bennett has said. He's assessed it correctly. We just need to be supporting. We should not be, Biden should not be telling them, you know, be proportional, not proportional, whatever it is. I mean, Israel is doing everything the right way. We just need to keep supporting them.
What do you think will happen?
I think the baseline case is a major strike targeting Iran's military and economic infrastructure. I think that is likely. The two outstanding questions would be whether they do something on the nuclear sites and whether they then target any of Iran's leadership in the way that they targeted Hamas and Hezbollah's leadership, and whether they decide to put that on the table. They haven't done that in the past, but this, I think everybody in Israel knows that this is the moment. This is the opportunity, and I think that there is almost total support for Netanyahu and doing a major strike to change the whole equation in the Middle East.
Well, not Nancy Pelosi. Listen to her. Cut 39.
So, again, every day is more dangerous for them. Free the hostages. So if you ask me if I respect his discretion, his judgment, the rest, I think he should have had the hostages free first and foremost before talking about the Philadelphia corridor and this, that, and the other thing.
So she's critical of Netanyahu. How would that have worked? Before you go into the tunnels and clear out Rafah, just get the hostages out for what, 2,000 prisoners, one of which the last time they gave you Sinwar out of prison, and he caused all this unrest and designed the attack of October 7th. So she just hates him. The vice president doesn't show up for his address to a joint session of Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that tell you?
Yeah, strangely, the Biden administration, Pelosi, and Schumer, for that matter, have personalized foreign policy differences, which is a mistake. They just shouldn't be doing that. I mean, right now, Israel is very much supportive behind what Netanyahu is doing. He's making historic gains against Israel and America's enemies, doing a lot of the stuff that America should have done to take out all of the, you know, leaders of Hezbollah who've killed so many Americans over decades. So Netanyahu has said number one priority is to destroy Hamas. Number two is hostages. He's executing against that strategy. He wants to accomplish both. I'm sure Sinwar right now as we speak is surrounded by Israeli and American hostages, and he never lets them leave his sight.
I'm sure that. And by the way, we just found out that the Israelis a couple of weeks ago took out his right-hand man. So don't tell me that Hamas is winning. They might try to spin it, but they also put out a missive in an interview with NBC, said that they feel abandoned. Only Iran has stood by them. Where's the Arab world? Brian, you've talked to these guys offline, these countries. How do they really feel about us, Israel, and Iran?
I think so many of them see Iran as the future, and they see the Palestinian leadership as hopeless. And unfortunately, you had people like Secretary of State Kerry who believed that all Middle East peace has to run through Palestine. And the Abraham Accords prove that's not true. You have a lot of Arab nations in the world, Middle East, Africa, South Asia, that have had it with the Palestinian leadership, given how corrupt they are, given how rich they are. And they're not going to let the Palestinian leadership have a veto over their future relations with Israel, which is a great defense, economic, and technology powerhouse, and all these countries want it.
Yeah. What about you, Brian? Would you go back if Trump wins?
Well, I'm doing everything I can to, you know, to help him win. It would be great for America, and it would certainly help calm down the Middle East. He did a terrific job. He just did such a great job with defeating ISIS, the Abraham Accords, countering Iran, standing with Israel. He really cracked the code on how to stabilize the Middle East. Doesn't get much credit for it. Left the Middle East better off than how he found it. And if he wins, which I very much hope he does, he's going to inherit a Middle East like he did when he came into office. And I very much believe he'll be able to stabilize and make it a much more peaceful Middle East, to say, you know, nothing of Europe.
So, Brian, I was talking to someone who's been in Afghanistan recently, and they said not only is Al-Qaeda back, they're unifying the terror groups, and Bin Laden's son is in charge. I mean, how unbelievable is that?
No, it's crazy. I mean, this is what, you know, Trump came into office after 8 years of Biden. He dismissed ISIS as the JV team. He got into this dumb Iran nuclear deal. And all of our friends were alienated and all of our enemies were emboldened. And that's going to be exactly what he inherits when he's elected. It's crazy.
Right. The Doha Agreement, would that have been implemented if you guys had won the election?
Which one?
The Doha Agreement, which you guys were beginning to hatch to show an eventual exit from Afghanistan?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's obviously President Trump, you know, had done a lot of work on Afghanistan, but he was the way that Biden handled that exit was a catastrophe. And President Trump would have never done anything like that.
Got it. Brian Hook, thanks so much. You know, you basically sacrificed your security for the country, and yet you'd still go back again. Brian Hook served as senior advisor to Tillerson and Pompeo during the Trump administration. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Always appreciate your input, especially people that roll up their sleeves and do the negotiating. This is breaking news, and it's not good. We're now up to 200 dead in Hurricane Helene. And guess what? They're not all the way through in North Carolina. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You also saw something interesting. We had a civil but spirited debate. And I did not underestimate Senator Vance as a slick talker. He could. But I also called out there, you can't rewrite history. You can't rewrite history. And trying to mislead us about Donald's Trump record, that's gaslighting. That's gaslighting.
Right. And we know that Tim Walz does not mislead at all, except for the DUI, except for witnessing Tiananmen Square when he wasn't there, except for fighting in a war that he wasn't in, except for talking about a rank that he didn't retire with. I don't know where to start. The guy embellishes. He was assistant coach for a few years, calls himself a coach. I think he came off very likable. I felt bad for him. I felt like he was totally out of his element, out of his league. But now I guess you're going to see more of him. He's going to do a podcast about culture. He's going to do a late night show. I don't know which one. And he's going to do 60 Minutes. So the wheels could really come off, but I think they'll probably give him an easy time. But the worst is Tiananmen Square. That's when he came out and started talking about his Nebraska, driving a car in Nebraska. Riding a bike in Nebraska. When asked if you lied about Tiananmen Square, always bring up bike riding. Here's Tim Walz trying to further explain. Cut to.
Yeah, look, I have my dates wrong. I was in Hong Kong in China in 1989. That move from Hong Kong into China, it was profound for me. That was the summer of democracy. I said it's where I understood how sacred democracy was. It's what encouraged me about 15 back and forth with my students, taking them to China to understand both, first of all, the culture, but also to teach Chinese students about democracy.
Right. I'm sure they really want to take a lesson from the school teacher, the American school teacher from Minnesota. But there's something really mysterious about his passion for China. And I don't know if it's an Eric Swalwell situation or a spy situation like Governor Hochul in New York, or like the driver of Senator Feinstein for years was a Chinese spy, we find out. Can you imagine this? She was chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and her driver is a spy. Did you try to compromise the governor from Minnesota when he was congressman from Minnesota? Why would you go there? Not 15, but you said 30 times. Right. 30 times where you can say bad things about China, but for the most part, you like China. You go to bat for China. Well, now they got they might have a vice president that loves China. We'll see. Let's go out to Tom. Tom, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And glad of it. A few points. Let's step back for the bigger picture. I was stunned by the scholarship and facts in Jonah Goldberg's book, Liberal Fascism. I thought he was tongue-in-cheek, but that's an actual quote from a British author. The bottom line is he documents thoroughly that there's no difference between progressives, socialists, communists, and fascists. He asserted that, and history has shown it, that their philosophy is to say, do, anything to get power, keep power, and increase power. And so they're baked in liars, and it needs to be understood. Now, let's listen to what Kamala says. Let's listen to her. She says, if I have it close, my values have not changed.
I know.
Unquote. Right. That is, I see that as that's her seed planted as an out for the future. She when
that was a wink and a nod. I appreciate the call, Tom. Thank you. I'm just up against the clock. To build on your point, yesterday, I brought this up arbitrarily. I said the reason why the squad's been so quiet, because they believe that Kamala Harris has to get elected and then she'll do what they want. Yesterday, Ilhan Omar spoke out. She says to her fellow progressives and lawmakers, she says, how far we're going to see how far we can push Vice President Kamala Harris when she wins the presidency. It's about us organizing and seeing how far we can push her once she wins. Then she goes on to say it's about organizing all of us together. So she has a goal. Get her elected. I have no shot of pushing Trump anywhere. But, man, I could push her around. And Jayapal says it is important that she has a team, as the president did, and a chief of staff, as the president did, that really values progressive things. Nice. Let's find out if there's more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
John Daly says his Florida home destroyed by Hurricane Helene. Let's listen.
It was bad. I mean, I feel for everybody. I mean, you know, I'm surprised we didn't lose more people, but it's sad for the sad, you know, the ones that we did, and it's devastating. It's the worst I've ever seen, and hope everybody gets safe and gets their homes back. And
he was talking to PGA.com about him losing everything. Daly says he and his loved ones were not injured by the hurricane. In fact, he said he had hardly been at the place over the last couple of years while he spent most of his free hours as residents in Arkansas. Next, the LAPD is turning in their own kids for flash mob robberies. I love it. Flash mobs on the 12th in Wilshire Boulevard, on the 19th over in Beverly Boulevard, on the 2nd on Wilshire Boulevard again, San Vicente. Well, it turns out parents of some unruly teens accused of that flash mob recognized their kids, said at least three of the parents have turned their children into police. The series of robberies occurred over the summer. She goes from July until September. The LAPD responded to 14 reports of flash mobs. Some wore masks and T-shirts pulled over their faces. The parents are cracking down on their own children. Where have you been all along? I don't know any kid, any parent who has kids that rob stores. Next, Bank of America hit with an outage. Some customers' accounts go down to zero. They're supposed to be fully back today. But can you imagine going to your ATM thinking you got thousands, maybe millions, and it says zero? And you can't blame your card. That's the scary thing. That's what I would also worry about. Everything up in the sky, satellites controlling all this. Hey, don't forget, October 20th, hope to see everyone at Peekskill, New York, History, Liberty, and Laughs, BrianKilmeade.com, and One Nation, Saturday at 9.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.